Welcome back to the show, Chef. Let me ask you something. When was the last time you slowed down long enough to ask yourself why you're still doing this? Not how to do it faster, better, cheaper, but why you're doing it at all. Because in any industry, sprinting towards automation, ghost kitchens, worker-owned co-ops, one thing is clear. Survival won't be about speed. It'll be about soul. Today on Chef Life Radio, I sit down with Chef Simon Zacherka, host of the Culinary Mechanic Podcast, to talk about the tectonic shifts happening beneath our feet in the culinary world. And let's be honest, it's not the same industry we signed up for. But the ones who'll thrive, they're the ones who lead with clarity, intention, and a whole lot of heart. In this episode, we explore what it really means to lead with purpose in a time of chaos, how technology and counter-service models are reshaping hospitality, the rising tide of disasters, burnout, and industry-wide fatigue, and the very real power of empathy, humility, and intentional leadership in building something that lasts. This conversation isn't just about a glimpse into what's coming. It's a reminder of what we can build if we do it together. Stick around. We'll be back with all that and a whole lot more right after this. Welcome to Chef Life Radio, the podcast dedicated to helping chefs and culinary leaders take control of their kitchens, build resilient teams, and create a thriving career in hospitality. I'm Chef Adam Lamb, your host, leadership coach, and industry veteran. If you're tired of high turnover, burnout, and the daily grind, you're not alone. This podcast is here to give you the real strategies, insights, and tools you need to lead with confidence, build a culture of excellence, and craft a kitchen that works for you, not against you. Because the best kitchens don't just survive, they thrive. Hit that subscribe button and let's get started. So, Chef, this gives us an opportunity to, you know, revisit some folks that we really love having on the show, and you're one of our favorites. I know it's been probably over a year since we connected, and I just wanted to check in and see what's going on. How's your business? What's going on? You know, we were talking about, you know, kind of venturing in as a solopreneur, as, you know, someone who's got a body of work and experience that they want to leverage. And I always love highlighting these stories because I think for a lot of us, you know, in the industry, we're like, oh shit, what else can we do other than being a chef? So you probably talk to some guys, some chefs as well, who like would love to transition out, but just don't know where to go. So, so I wanted to kind of bridge that story with, like, you mentioned that you just spent the last year just focusing on the podcast, Culinary Mechanic. And why did you decide to do that?
You know, I had a client in 2023 and there was so much drama and I kept getting pulled into the drama between the chef and the owner. And I woke up one day and I was like, you know, this is exactly what I was trying to get away from. And I just felt like, wait, this is one client. So it's going to dissipate, but wait, what am I missing? And then as I got closer to 2024, I really fucked up my business development cycle. I was sitting in the middle of December and I had no work past January.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, I wasn't willing to pander myself. I wasn't willing to get in the way of the chefs and the owners during the holiday season. I'm going to have to take it on the chin and figure something else out, because that's not who I am. And all of a sudden I was like, gosh, I have some work now. It's December, it's January, but I don't have a lot of, you know, I've been wanting to do my podcast. I really wanted to do it. So I just kind of pressed play and started going, you know? And what I realized really quickly was that I was able to hone in what I was thinking and what I was posting on LinkedIn and posting on Facebook and posting on Instagram. And all of a sudden, because I'm talking to other people and I'm listening to other ideas, my creative juices flowed a little bit better. And so what started off as I'm going to fill some time made me realize, oh my God, this is a lot of work. I completely appreciate how much work a podcast is. You've been doing podcasts for a few years now, and man, it can be a bear if you let it. thank goodness for some technology out there. And, you know, obviously there's some AI to help certain things move faster, but it, no matter what, to do it, what I think to improve on a regular basis requires a good amount of effort. That was sort of how I got into it. And I love it, man. I love talking to our people.
Now, take us back and kind of like the broad overview. When you decided, okay, I'm going to take a stab at Culinary Mechanic as a business entity, what did you think at that time, like those elements of the business would be?
Ooh. I really didn't know. If I'm totally honest, when I first met you in 2022, I was recovering from a burnout like no other.
Yeah.
COVID just ate me alive in 2021. And I found myself in the summer of 2022 looking around going, what do I want to do? And I talked to some people and I went through some coaching. And I was like, man, everybody encouraged me to look back at the lessons I'd learned as a chef and really take from that. And so I was like, man, leadership changed my life. When I started focusing on leadership, my career got better. When I started focusing on the combination of leadership and taking care of people and hospitality, then I was able to help develop people better. And in fact, at one point I joked that I was a sous chef farm because I was growing these people at this tremendous rate. And so fast forward, now I'm looking for a business. I'm trying to figure out what it is. I didn't even have the name at the time, but I realized I wanted to be some kind of a leadership coach, consultant, restaurant consultant guy. And Culinary Mechanic was a joke from 10 years ago because I was frustrated with the lack of sexiness per se in as a chef. It was just really grindy and it felt like I was doing the same thing. Felt like I was loosening a bolt every night and tightening it every morning. And I'm the Culinary Mechanic was the joke and the anger, but then I realized that's such a great fun name.
Yeah. And
so going forward, it was, how do I help people like really understand the mechanism of a restaurant, the mechanism of a kitchen? I kind of took that mechanic thing, you know, literally and just started to think about the each and every little system that are systems that we use on paper or the way we do, this is where it comes in, the way we do everything, right? Mm-hmm. And just starting to distill down, and it's still a work in progress for sure. But what I've had the most success with is just helping people stop and look at what they're doing and ask them what they really want to be doing, you know? Yeah, that's where I'm at, man. Just trying to help people one day at a time. And in the process, really continuing to heal myself and continuing to stay true to my commitment that I made to myself on April 24th, 2022. I said, use the brain differently. That's not what it is. Just do it. Do something, whatever you're going to do, just do something that exercises this little muscle up here differently. And what a ride, man. I can't tell you how happy I am that I'm finding a second thing that I'm enjoying.
You know? One of the things that always surprises me is that, you know, I've talked to some people in our industry and they're like, dude, I've been to school. I'm not going to learn anymore. It's like, it's done. I've got it. And yet I think, speaking for most of us, it's kind of one of our unspoken strengths is that we have the capacity to continue to learn, continue to evolve, especially in the craft, because you're finding out a new way to do it. And, oh, that's pretty cool. And then you start going down the rabbit hole. And what I don't think we appreciate is how much that serves us in other areas or businesses that we go into. Like, I've had to learn so much shit. I mean, when I started the podcast in 2008, man, there was like, nobody knew what a podcast was. There was no, I had to learn how to build a WordPress site. And then I had to do all these plugins and it was a workaround and was constantly moving and changing. And then I just look at the landscape today at the platforms and software and shit. It's friggin' amazing, man. It's friggin' amazing. But if I had gone, this is it for me, I'd have been stuck in the water. And like you're saying, now you're just getting ready to launch regularly the newsletter and you're like, oh crap, there's another thing over here and there's another thing. But isn't that fun? Isn't learning that shit is fun, right?
Oh, it's what did I say the other day?
Fun is not the right word, but
it is tremendously fun, but it's a 50-pound bag of onions with a brand new knife.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's new calluses, it's new cuts on your finger, it's oh shit, this thing's heavy, or you know, whatever. I tell people on a regular basis, I'm about 15 pounds into that 50-pound bag, you know, and the calluses are forming and the blisters are happening. And there's days when I want to just scream, yell, and run around my front yard and go, fuck. Mm. And there's other days where I'm like, this is so cool. Yeah. You know? Yeah, talked about somebody who went, oh, I went to culinary school and I'm done learning. Man, if you're done learning, you are not paying attention. I was 25 years into my chef world when I worked for a third generation French chef who said, you're making stocks wrong.
Right.
And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what are you talking about, man?
Right.
He's, you roast the bones too hot. You roast the veg separately. This is shit.
Right.
I don't like this. And I went, what? You know, do you know what a roasting pan is for? He goes, you use sheet pans. I use roasting pans. And so we went from roasting bones at 400 and 450 to 3 1/4. Mm. And we roasted them in the roasting pan. And then when we got a decent amount of color, he'd have me go in, take all the bones out, put them on whatever, you know, put them on a sheet pan for a minute, take all the veg, throw that in,
yep,
roast it. And then once it was good and roasted, then we would put all the bones on top of that.
Amazing. Like, no more bitterness.
Everything got to do what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You tasted carrot, you tasted sweetness to a greater level. You tasted celery to a greater, like everything did what it was supposed to do. And I found that there was far less skimming,
yep,
because more of the fats and goopy crap stuff, like just went right into the veg. And when you pulled the veg off and you know, when you strained that off, you weren't skimming the stock forever. Yeah. It was amazing. So just to say, I mean, I'd been cooking for 25 years and all of a sudden things changed for me. And I went, look at that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always amazed when I would go do a stage. Unlike a lot of people, I did stages well through my career, right? So I'd been cooking for 20 something years almost, and I got a chance to go to Washington, D.C. And I went to, where did I go? Vidalia. And this is a place that had, at that point had been a 4-star restaurant, two newspapers for 10 years. Mm. And it just blew my mind. It's like, oh, no, you don't do it that way. Oh, and that's when I started to really think about every chef has their way to do something.
Yeah. Like you have to hang your hat on one thing or two things. No, we're going to do it by hand.
You have to cut more of the onion off or less of the onion off when you're doing it and blah, 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 blah. And so, that doesn't make a difference. Well, it makes a difference here. Got it. This is your dogma. Okay. Yeah. And it's what helped me fall in love again with what we do as chefs, because it is also informed a little bit about, you see the same thing with podcasters and the same thing with people who are doing social. Well, you can't do that. You got to post this many times. Post that many times. And what I realized is, fuck it. Just do it, man. Just do it.
There's a guy I discovered not too long ago, Dan Coe, who religiously says, you know, people are going to tell you how to do this, launch a product. I even have a methodology. Fuck it. You like gather all that information and then do it in the way that serves you. Right. And let's go back to a second about this idea of, because I think certainly when I changed jobs, I would have this kind of frenetic energy. Like I had to cover a lot of ground in the first couple of days or first couple of months, so make sure that I was handling everything and, you know, present and accounted for, sir. And you were mentioning that, you know, in making this shift towards the culinary mechanic, you decided that you were going to focus on the podcast, wasn't really focusing on coaching or other elements, but you kind of wanted to get this portion right before moving on to the other thing. And I'm curious if you could speak a little bit about what that feels like to not put the pressure on yourself to have to be a master of everything from Jump Street.
Fucking torture.
Yeah.
It is completely alien to my, what we were taught. If you were taught anything like I was taught, it is completely alien. You know, the pace at which we are programmed, and we truly are, we're programmed to operate and deliver. I mean, life is 6 minutes at a time, right?
Yeah.
When you're doing food, it's instant gratification. And that's right there. One of the things that I had to learn is that there's no end of day like, oh, that was a great shift. There's nothing to tell me that I've done a good job, because maybe I didn't, but I'm not going to find out for months. All by itself, like learning to be the designer, learning to be the social media strategist, all these things that go into solopreneur work and all of that, they're all so laid out in a different space that for me, it's still every couple of days, my wife looks at me and goes, are you breathing? Are you drinking enough water? Because,
right.
And I'm like, I can't get people to respond as fast as I'm expecting them. Even in the restaurant business, in the companies I work for, people would respond because it was all about urgency. They knew that if you didn't find out what was going on with that cut of beef that you asked the guy to bring you, then, you know, your whole plan for your specials is out the window, and it's all urgent. And the rest of the world, I found out the rest of the world doesn't all work that way.
Sure.
You know, and my last company turned all of that to 11 anyway. So I spent 9 years working at this like vigorous pace.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I just had a beer recently with my old boss, and he's now working for another company and he's having a good old time. And he left just before I did. And we're now, whatever, 2-3, you know, he's 3.5. I'm 2.5 years out and away from this last job. And he's, so are you digging the air out here? I'm like, I am, man. He goes, it's so crazy the pace we moved at. And his wife is having to tell him the same thing my wife is having to tell me, which is, hey, take it easy, right? There's nothing that says that you have to get all of that done. You know, I have afternoons where my dogs will not chill out. They're cute, right. Two cute little 15-pound pugs, and they want attention, and they want to go for a walk. And I'm like, I'm trying to get this done. And it's like, no, screw it. Stop trying to push that peg through the hole.
Yeah, because sometimes you got to know when to give up, right? I don't mean give up, but when you're pushing a noodle up a hill, you know, recognizing that in yourself to go, okay, nothing is landing right here in this moment. So what else is there to do? And to your point, Mouse, I had this happen yesterday. I was trying to finish this project and Mouse comes up and pushes my leg. Come on, dude, what are you doing? Come on. And I'm like, what? I don't want to yell at him, but I'm like, yeah, he's a great pattern interrupt for me.
Noodle up a hill. Hold on, let me write that down.
Oh, that's a phrase I use a lot. Like when it feels like you're pushing a wet noodle, like a cooked noodle up the hill.
Yeah.
Then you know, like if as soon as the frustration starts hit, and I'm just speaking for myself, like there, because I've been trained, chained, conditioned to like power through things, I would just keep going and keep going and like willing an outcome instead of understanding that something else is calling my attention right now. This isn't necessarily landing. And don't you know it? Like putting that aside for 24 hours, you come back the next day and everything goes right.
Yeah, you know, this actually brings up something that I coach people on, and it all comes back to me from reading something, and I feel like it was like the Harvard Business Review, and I want to say 10 years ago they did a big long study about optimal work patterns, you know, and all somebody's always doing a study about something, but what they essentially found was that like your capacity to make great decisions diminishes after like 7 hours. Oh, 7 hours of work after that, boom. But yet here we are in an industry, and I don't want to be too soapboxy, but it's going to require a little bit.
Sure.
Here we are in an industry that just praises and reinforces like work hard, go 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours. I mean, I, that same French chef that, you know, I worked for that taught me how to do stocks. If I had a 14 hour day and then I looked a little soggy the next day, you are not a real chef. You're not, you know, you're just a fucking American, you know?
Yeah. But and, see, the veneration of overwork, man, I think to your point, you know, we do it to each other. Just like the chef is like ragging you out. I mean, I've said the same thing. I had a guy send me a message the other day, a couple evenings ago when he was talking about, he feels, you know, shaming his cooks is like, it works. It's not optimal, but it works. Like, I don't know any other way to get through these cooks. And yet we kind of fall back into that all the time. I mean, shouldn't say all the time, but it seems to me that like that whole idea that we're continuing to egg each other on.
Totally.
I guess it's not healthy, dude.
And here's the thing for me. When I started to realize maybe 8 or 9 years ago that there was a point where when I was pushing, when I was trying to write that special or when I was trying to get the schedule done so it was done, I would start to make slapping things together decisions.
Yep.
And now when I'm trying to create content or I'm trying to get the logo just right and I'm trying to slap it together, I wake up when I finish and I turn everything off and I go make dinner and I wake up the next morning and I come and I look at it. I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking?
Back to man, that you were writing like late at night and go.
And it used to happen in the kitchen where I'd be like, wait, if I'm in a certain zone, if I'm trying to push it through, like without getting too woo, I'm not letting things flow. And when things flow, right, when the energy flows in a positive direction, my creativity is better. My decision-making skills are much clearer and more focused. And I'm doing things that are much more aligned with who I want to be, how I want to be perceived, all of that, everything. But when I'm trying to jam it through, you know, and I've had this conversation with a number of chefs in the last year, 2 years, and some of them laugh at me and some of them stop and it like hits them just straight up, like cinder block to the forehead.
Yep.
And I was like, if you can slow down just that much and understand how you feel when you're doing something and understand that there's times that you just gotta let it go. You know, I think of, oh God, I'm tired. Let's just pick this up in the morning. Like when you're working with a group, you know, you're just not, whatever you're doing, whether it's working on my patio out back and you're trying to work into the dark. Wait, we're pushing past, right? We're pushing past the good space. So I just keep trying to find myself in a position where things are flowing. And sometimes, you know, I hear the hustle culture and I hear it and I see it all over social media. And it's, wait, you know, wait, is this urgent? Is this true? Do I have to have this done? Or if I do it just a little bit better, maybe a half a degree slower, will it feel more like me and will it resonate with what I'm trying to get done? Even though it's going to take an extra 2 days, 3 days, whatever that may be. And that's what I'm realizing, you know, goes back to like the whole posting thing. Be consistent. Great. I had a hip replaced in December and I just stopped. I was like, my brain couldn't do it. And I was in so much pain. I didn't realize it till afterwards, but I was in so much pain in the 50 days going into that surgery that my face looked differently. I guess I was like, my body posture was different. And people in my neighborhood who saw me walking my dogs were like, God, are you okay? Yeah. And then fast forward, December 17th, I get hip surgery. 2 weeks later, I'm walking without a cane, like without a care in the world.
It's pretty crazy.
Titanium parts, yay. And people, I'm now, you know, early January, I start taking clients again and go see a chef I haven't seen now in 2 months. And he's, you look amazing. I'm like, what? Yeah. He goes, no, your face, you don't look stressed. He goes, you look younger. I'm like, I don't look younger, man. He goes, you look younger. He goes, your face isn't all scrunched up and you're standing. He goes, how did you get taller? I'm like, I guess I'm standing up straighter.
Yeah. I want to kind of, you know, label what you were talking about, like this whole idea of the energy with which you're doing something is the most important thing. It's not necessarily what you're doing, but the energy, like when you're talking about being in alignment with who you are and the message that you're trying, like it comes through writing, it comes through video, it comes through all that stuff. And that was a lesson that it took me a while to understand. And yet I knew that even in cooking, like in a commercial facility, you know, angry cooks make shitty food, not because they're slapping it around, but it's the energy in which you eat that. And you're like, yeah, something doesn't, it's off with that. I want to run back to this idea about the feedback loop, because you mentioned something very interesting, which was, you know, doing a podcast is kind of a, I don't want to say it's a lonely thing, but there's certainly plenty of moments that you spend by yourself editing, and then you get ready to post and you're wondering when the feedback comes. And let's face it, nobody really, you know, posts a comment on a podcast post other than cool or whatever. But
yeah,
I'm curious if you had the same experience, because the restaurant industry has that wonderful benefit of immediate feedback. Like we were always like really clear about what was working, what wasn't working, almost kind of bluntly. But did you get to a point where, you know, gratitude started to fall on kind of like deaf ears for you? Like people would say, oh, chef, that was the greatest meal. And you're kind of, and to yourself, you're kind of like going, whatever.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I guess I got kind of lucky in that for those that are out there in the food industry and the food media space, Sean Walcha, right?
Oh, yeah.
Kelly Barbecue Media.
Yep.
I met him the week before I launched my first podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something in our 10-minute Zoom call that really, once again, made me stop. And he said, Simon, stop praying. Do not start praying for as fast as possible. Start praying for as long as it takes.
Yep.
He goes, because until you have done 100 episodes of this podcast, you're not even going to know who the hell you are. He goes, and if you do, great. If you don't, it's okay. And if it takes longer than 100, great. But you're going to learn so many lessons in 100. Get to 100. I'll have you know I'm at 53 right now. And I've just come to accept that I might have a bunch of listeners and viewers or whatever. Or I may not, but in the process, my bag of onions is on the table and I'm banging away.
So
I am learning how to hold the new knife. So yes and no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was reflecting back to the cooking days, so to speak. Right. Like it was like, I would have this thing where I put so much energy into, say, a specific dinner or a party or whatever. And then when it came time to the execution, it went completely to plan and everybody's raving about it. But I would almost have this kind of depressive attitude afterwards, like realizing I put so much energy in this thing. And now, you know, 24 hours later, most of these folks aren't going to remember it. And it just kind of struck me as like, after a while, it got to the point where, you know, everybody, hey, that's really great. Really appreciate it. After a while, it didn't resonate for me until I stopped doing and understood that now that feedback loop is gone.
Yeah.
Now I have a deeper appreciation for when someone actually expresses gratitude. I'm like, oh, thanks. That's really cool. Like it, somehow it means something more significant. Does that land with you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it has become an affirmation of the fact that I'm doing something I'm in love with.
Yeah.
I say it, if you listen to my podcast, you hear me say it. This is a labor of love. Like, frankly, I try not to say it too often, but listen or don't listen, I'm having a good time.
Yeah. And that comes through. And that's what becomes like, all of a sudden, you're listening to someone who's authentic, who, you know, is doing what they love, regardless of how difficult it is. And nobody told you that you had to do it. You just said, no, I'm going to do this.
I think for me, it fills us. Here's another thing about the restaurant industry that I don't have anymore. My last job, spent 9 years in it. I was overseeing 3, 4, 7 restaurants given on any given week or month. And I would have 100, 150 interactions in a day.
Sure.
I work in a 10 by 10 room now. Right? Exactly. My wife works from home, so I see my wife. Mm-hmm. I have two cute little dogs. I see them. So me doing a podcast and getting to come on other people's podcasts, thank you, by the way, means that I'm getting to talk to people. I would say half of my clients that I'm coaching and advising are virtual. So I see them through this, but I have one or two where I go out and I actually exist in the world, pay for parking, the whole bit, you know?
So
it's getting, you know, it fills a little bit of the gap left by not being in the restaurants every
day. Oh yeah, man. I have a partner out in California where I go back and when I'm standing in the kitchen, it all rushes right back to me, man. It just feels so good. Like being in the action and being elbow to elbow with everybody. It just feels so good. And yet when I come home, I also appreciate the fact that I don't necessarily have to do that every day. Now, because of the podcast, because of the type of guests that you have on, I'm just curious, what have you been hearing in the community, in the culinary community of late? Not necessarily what's happening, but how's everybody feeling?
Yeah. Mostly, I'm feeling people are okay. They're strongly in the okay box. But everybody's talking about change. Everybody's talking about it's not the same as it was 3 years ago. Everybody's talking about, except the guy in Fiji. coming up. That dude, he's just, life is good, man. I'm on an island and I oversee he's got 3 resorts on the island and he basically has his master blaster control space of 5 monitors that he's able to look at the kitchens and the numbers all at the same time from his one desk, and he oversees 9 restaurants and he just checks in. If he sees a problem, he hops in his little like golf cart buggy thing and drives over to the restaurant, puts on a Chef White and gets to work for a little while. We're off in this like zone where everything's good. And, or, you know, you're on an island. So you're on a small island. He goes, so there's no need for pressure. Just cook good food, relax. So he's like the only one, but everybody else, they're just still changing and evolving, you know. Up here in Seattle, people are freaking out because minimum wage is $20.76.
Yep.
I talked to some people that I used to work with, and they have full service restaurants, and they're pretty sure that their next couple restaurants their restaurants are Southwestern and Tex-Mex kind of thing, Mexican food. They're thinking counter service taqueria is going
forward. Yep.
Like servers, busboys, goodbye.
Yeah.
You pay the cashier to wipe down the counter and call it a day.
Yeah, I even noticed in some fast food joints, like I was driving in California and stopped at a McDonald's, and there are kiosks now in front of the...
Everywhere.
You know, instead of... And there's one person behind a register, but you mainly shoveling every... They acted fast. And yet, here in North Carolina, you know, we just did Helene last year, which was a pretty shocking experience, dude. I mean, I lived in Florida 5 years for 25 years and went through 5 hurricanes. And nothing like that, dude. I mean, the mountains really made a difference in channeling the energy of the storm. And what's happened is most of the affordable housing that got washed, literally carried off in the fucking river, whole houses and shit. I went down to the river several weeks afterwards and they were all like, it looked like ribbons in the trees. I'm like, what is this? All fucking PVC pipe wrapped around the trees, 40 feet high for when it crested and just taking all this stuff down. That there's restaurants who are probably going to end up closing because there's just no place for, like, the workers have no place to live in their affordability range. And it's a lot that these guys are going through. And Asheville is considered to be a really great food town. I mean, there's 3 beer chefs here. So for them to have to consider that they have to close a restaurant just because you can't get staff, that's kind of a shocking thing. I know Denver's going through the same thing. What I hear a lot is rents. Like the rents are going through the roof. They can't afford goddamn rent. and then on top of the increased minimum wage, or it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, just keep slogging it out there for, I saw a post on Facebook where this guy's, so can anybody tell me when does this pay off?
As long as it takes, man.
Yeah.
But here's the crazy thing. At the same time, I mean, I feel really blessed because I, as somebody who's doing some consulting work and you do consulting work, I just got hired to help a guy take his company. He's got two restaurants and a one ghost kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And he is 26 days away from opening number four. And he is 150 days away from opening number five, which will act as his cold food commissary. So he's planning on doing, and it's tacos, right? It's a taqueria, and he's doing Mexico City style tacos up here in the middle of the nowhere. And cool. It is resonating, you know? And so he's planning on, I'm going to have a whole row of big immersion blenders. And I was like, look at you. He's planning it out. And so we did. And I was like, you should flip that. He was like, oh, I like that. So whatever. But he, you know, there are people who are finding ways to do it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that just relying on standard methodology, the way we've always done it, is going to get you through.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to another restaurateur recently, just chatting at a birthday party, and they are working towards turning their single restaurant into a worker-owned co-op.
Yep.
They've already contacted a nonprofit and the lawyers, and they're on a 3 or 4 year plan to get that done.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And they signed a 10-year lease.
Yep.
And when we sat and had coffee, and I said, tell me about your culture. Like, what's going on in this building that you can do this?
Yeah.
And they're like, we really try really hard every day to treat people like people. And we understand when their kid is sick, and we don't berate them for missing work, and we don't allow people to work sick. And I was like, man, who are you? Like, where did you come from? But thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know? And so for me, that's the lesson. It's do it. Treat people right. They will treat you right. It comes through. I want to work with them because their food needs a little help.
Cool.
But, you know, I said, I would love to sit down and have more coffee and talk about a few things. And if there's a relationship to be had at some point, great. But other than that, just, you know, good people. And I think that's what I'm hoping for on a daily basis right now.
Yeah.
It's just more people really see that it's people. You got to take care of them.
It's not a mystery. It's not that hard. I mean, I shouldn't say it's not that hard. It takes it out of me and puts it over there with, I want to know what their experience is, right? I already know what my experience is. I want to know where they're at, you know, emotionally and all that, because that breaks down a lot of my bullshit, right? Because if I'm over there with them, it's awfully hard for, you know, me to like kind of fall back into in a position where I wouldn't value them as whole human beings, you know, because they're more than just who shows up. I mean, they got a whole life outside of this. And wouldn't it be cool to have the thing that I always really loved the idea about building a co-op and done a lot of investigative work around that is it's a very quick way to have 15 hardcore advocates out there in the community talking about the restaurant they're a part owner of. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm talking about that shit all day long. Are you kidding me? Co-op owned? You guys got to come in because it's in their best interest of the livelihood. So it's a great way to turn a staff into not only owners but they have emotional buy-in and are going to talk to people in the grocery line or whatever. I think it's a fantastic idea. And to your point, the resilience and the adaptability of some of these operators, to me, you're just like, wow, that's so cool. Taking in all the information, like, okay, so what do we do now? Like, what can we do? What's possible? Like shifting it here, shifting it there. And just because, you know, the papers say one thing or the news says another doesn't necessarily mean that opportunities don't exist for them. And they realize that. So yeah, it's brilliant. Chef, what are you hoping for in for this next year for Culinary Mechanic?
You know, I just more. every day that I do it, every time that I release an episode and do some promo clips, I just look around and realize that the number keeps growing and it's slow. There's sometimes where I'm like, oh, I have two more followers than I did last week.
Yeah.
I'm good. So more, I think that for me, it's continuing to hone the message. It's continuing to talk to more people. I'm just working on a couple different things to try and get the word out. You know, in this world of technology, I'm looking at building an online course. And the funny thing is, I thought that it would be something big and grandiose around kitchen management. And I keep coming back to time management. I'm building a course on time management because with as much information and as many ideas as there are out there, people struggle with decision fatigue on it.
Yeah.
It's the Cheesecake Factory menu. It's the massive menu. You look at it and you go, there's a million ways to manage my time. I don't know what to do. So how about this? I'm going to package up four little pieces that have worked for me and have worked for some of my friends and have worked for some of my clients. And we're going to teach them at a slice the onion level.
You know, dude, I think fundamentally those types of courses are highly desirable. And, you know, it's solving a very specific problem. When we're talking about leadership, which, you know, both of us talk about it all the time and we break it down into certain little categories and stuff. But to put together a program, like you said, kitchen management or culinary leadership or whatever, that seems like a pretty massive undertaking because, you know, we have the benefit of, you know, X amount of years in the industry and that wisdom was hard born to try to translate that into a consumable course that someone's going to sit through. What I recognize to your point is here's how to do a great 360 degree review, you know, three modules, that's it. And because it answers a very specific question, which again speaks to like becoming a better leader, increasing retention because you're doing these little things on what's it like to onboard somebody successfully, right? And what happens within the 90 days? Because really the 90 day mark is, from what I understand, there's 70% of people leave before the 90 day mark. So there's something happening within those 90 days that is failing the industry. Okay, so are you doing one-on-one check-ins? Is there, you know, a mentor that they meet with once a week? Like what, because the statistics are once you last 90 days, you know, 80% of those people are going to be sticking around for a year. So looking at it like, how can we best serve? I did a post today on LinkedIn about a particular thing. And I liked being able to, here's a solution, like to your point, here's a solution that worked for me, worked for some of my clients, take it, try to add value where you can. And sometimes it's just as simple as just to your point, like putting your hand up and saying, yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
No, slow down, look around, you know, and I mean, I keep going back to, you know, go slow, slow as smooth as fast. Take a half a breath, you know. For me, I think intention is everything, right? Being intentional. And somebody said to me, they're like, you use words with so many letters. He goes, I'm sure I can figure it out, but what is it? He asked me, he's like, what is intention to you? I'm like, have a plan, dude. That's it. Fucking have a plan.
Yeah.
Have some plan. Pull out the map and say, I want to go there. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but that's where I'm going and have some direction. For me, is intentional anything, you know? And I got to reduce it down to that. Otherwise, it gets to be too much sometimes,
yeah.
You know? The other one, it goes back to like, when I would onboard somebody for my past companies, we would always talk about, you know, uniform and dress code and appearance.
Crisp.
And you know what? I got rid of it because I'm the guy who carries stubble all the time. You know what? I even went to my owners and I was like, are we going to have a problem? I've probably 3 weeks in, I'm like, are we going to have a problem? Because I carry 2 days of shadow. I don't shave every day. My skin doesn't like it. I don't like it. I look really sexy with this much stubble on my face. I'm going to rock this. And you know, and they looked at me and they said, you know, times are changing. So go ahead, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And so what my rule became was show up on purpose. Show up and show me that you said, this is what I'm going to look like today. Don't show up looking like you rolled out of bed and you got steamrolled on the way to work. Show up and just tell me with your actions, with your look, with your appearance, that it's on purpose. And if a little stubble and a wave in your hair is what it is, I'm good, but it's got to be on purpose. There has to be some intention behind it.
You know, you bring up something that I remembered during the pandemic. I was a dining director at a upscale retirement community here in Nashville. And we were going through like our core values and trying to get buy-in from everybody. So we kind of had house rules. And one of the house rules that, you know, was open, like everybody was going to have to agree on these house rules, and that's the way we're going to move forward, was a move with a sense of purpose and plate with intention. That's it, man. If you're moving through the kitchen with a, you know, a sense of purpose, I'm going here, I'm going there, I'm going, like understanding to your point, like having a plan and then holding it so loosely that, you know, you can make a change to the plan. It's not going to upset your entire day.
Totally.
And I was going to, my last question to you was going to be, you know, what would you tell yourself 2 years ago? Or, you know, what would you say to somebody who's considering moving out of the day-to-day grind into being of service to the rest of the community, which is what I believe you and I do. But I think you nailed it, man. Intention, take your time, breathe.
I got one last point on that, though.
Jeez, yes.
All right. So somewhere along the lines of my last couple weeks with my job, I was interviewing coaches, you know, talking to a couple different firms and people. And I finally get on the phone with this one guy and he goes, hey, man, it sounds like you're ready for a change. He goes, and I think that's great. He says, but I gotta let you know. And I was like, oh boy, what's coming? You know, like, he's got some anticipation. He's like, I gotta let you know. What you're doing is opening a big, heavy door to disruption, right? Like change, this kind of change is disruption. He says, and I don't mean, you know, your living room is a little messy. He goes, I mean like loud, feedback-inducing, punk rock, cymbal smashing, guitar breaking, punk rock disruption.
Yep.
He goes, and it's fucking hurts, dude. He goes, and he goes, but on the other side is something really special. He goes, I just need you to know that. Yeah. And that's the dude I chose. Straight up. I was like, you speak my language. You understand that like things get rough. Things get crazy. Things get tough. Well, man, there's some good stuff on the other side. You know, we as chefs, we are programmed to succeed. We are conditioned to excel at a very intense rate. All you have to do, all I've had to do, I'm sure that you would agree on some level, is all you got to do is keep going. Just keep doing it. When you were making a special in the kitchen and it didn't quite work, you went back, you made it, you tasted it again, and you went, oh, that's what it's missing. That's all it is. That's all I can tell anybody who wants to make a change is like, fuck it up. Keep going. Keep tasting the food. You know what? Just keep going, man.
You learn more from failure than you do from success, right? Like that shit's fucking lasts a lifetime. I mean, you make
I've learned, and you're going, I learn every day because I'm failing. Every day,
right?
You know, and on the other side, my wife is, it's not a failure, that's really good. I'm like, ah, mortals.
I know, so I did a post about failure and they're like, I don't think I would use the word failure. I'm like, okay, regardless of how you want to label it, it still came short of my goal. Right?
Yeah.
And so for us, we always, you know, that was always like, no, you either win or you don't win. Okay, this worked or it didn't work. There's no kind of gray area. And man, there's clarity around that, because then you can go back and dissect, to your point, I'm breaking this dish down, man. I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'm not leading this one alone because I know it. And to that extent, like, again, kind of one of those hidden attributes of being in the culinary industry that I think serves in any industry that you want to go into is that idea of, you know, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable, man. Just because it didn't work the first time, I'm going to stick with it. Because if it was that easy, most of us would have walked from the industry years ago.
Yeah.
So for those in the industry, God bless you, man. Keep it up. Just
if we can help,
going.
Let us help. I mean, you know, I've had a couple people reach out to me and go, I can't afford to pay for coaching. And I was like, I don't care. And I send them the link and I'll talk to them, you know, just I had one guy who's doing what you were doing, upscale retirement stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm younger than my sous chef and he's just riding me. I'm like, just keep going, man. You know, just keep, I was like, he'll figure it out. Like that's one of those lessons. Like things happen for a reason. At some point that guy or gal will figure out why you have your job. I tell people for years when I would get a new sous chef into the building, almost always I would hire pretty high performers. So they would all call me by my first name for about, I don't know, a month, 2 months. And then every single time, Adam, somewhere in that, I don't know, one month, 2 months, 90 days, there would be the day, mm-hmm. that moment where they realize why they have their job, mm-hmm. why I have my job. And I am not the best in the world, but I have my job for a reason. Mm-hmm. I'm good at what I do. I work hard at what I do. And that from that day on, and I would never be of my, it would never be me saying, now you'll call me chef. It would just switch. And they would say, chef, can I, you know, and I will. And I, the first couple times it happened, it was like, huh, what just happened? And then after about five, I was like, this is a thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'm listening to the universe now. Got it.
Chef, if they want to get a hold of you, because they want to know more about you.
Culinarymechanic.com.
Culinarymechanic.com.
Yep. Culinarymechanic.com. You will find references to what I'm doing. Everything from leadership coaching to, you know, connecting and talking about the intersection of leadership and hospitality. Very much like you, I am aiming for a new kitchen culture.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, or it's just some good fun listening to some cool conversations. Yeah. I've been talking to tech folks and I've been talking to chefs. And I even talked to a lady who I found a leadership coach who does Fortune 500 stuff. And I was like, here's a funny one. I was like, yeah, we're going to take those big corporate concept, Fortune 500 concepts, and we're going to distill them down for the kitchen.
But
she laughs at me and she goes, Simon. And I said, yes. She goes, people are people.
Yeah.
Oh, blew my mind.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Chef, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate you, brother. It's been too long. So let's not make it another year. Okay.
Fair enough, brother. Fair enough. Thank you. Right. Thank you for having this platform and the opportunity to talk about what we love. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, it didn't take long in the conversation before, you know, my heart got all warm and fuzzy and opened up. And there's that dude. I love him. Thanks, brother. That's a wrap for today's episode of Chef Life Radio. If this resonated with you, do me a favor. Subscribe, share, and leave a review. Your feedback helps us reach more culinary leaders like you who are ready to take their kitchens to the next level. Want more? Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or join our Chef Life Radio community for exclusive insights and leadership tools. Remember, leadership isn't about perfection, it's about progress. So take what you've learned today and apply it in your kitchen, your team, and your life. Chef Life Radio is more than just a podcast, it's a movement. The focus is no longer just on career survival, but on transforming leadership, creating sustainability, and ensuring chefs can build kitchens that thrive. Remember, the secret ingredient to culinary success isn't just in the food, it's in the leadership. Keep learning, keep growing, and as always, lead with the heart. See you next time.